Our third case today is 2021-1018 In Re TA. The appellant, Mr. Hackett.
Chief Justice O'Connor, counsel, may it please the court, 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, Appellate Rule 26B creates a special forum for enforcing the right to effective assistance of appellate counsel. The decision below withholds that protection from juvenile defendants only because, in the court's words, a juvenile is not a defendant in a criminal case. That decision is wrong for three main reasons. First, both this court and the U.S. Supreme Court have repeatedly held for the last 50 years that rights for juveniles do not turn on mere labels. The second reason is that the decision misunderstands the reason 26B uses the term criminal defendant, the purpose of which was not to separate juveniles from adults, both of whom are facing incarceration and are therefore entitled to the effective assistance of counsel in the first place. And the third reason, Your Honors, is that the decision undoes a child's firmly established right to the effective assistance of counsel altogether, which we submit is an unintended and ultimately unconstitutional result. The first, and I think most important, ground for reversing the decision below is that well-established precedent explains two things. First, that rights do not turn on mere labels, that civil labels and good intentions do not obviate the need for criminal due process safeguards in juvenile cases. And second, and perhaps most importantly in this case, is that children have no less of a right to effective assistance of counsel than do adults. This right attaches.
Is that the question here? I mean, clearly under Murnahan, there is a right to raise an ineffective assistance counsel claim, and that would apply to a juvenile just as well as to an adult. But Rule 26B, by its terms, only applies to adult offenders. So, why shouldn't the juvenile simply exercise the right to challenge a claim for ineffective assistance counsel under Murnahan?
Well, two answers to that, Your Honor, if I may. First, the plain language, of course, refers only to criminal defendants, and we acknowledge that. But plain language cannot be read to achieve absurd or unconstitutional
results.
Well,
why is it absurd? I mean, we have the case in Murnahan that explained how someone pre-Rule 26B could exercise a right to assert a claim of ineffective assistance appellate counsel. That's would seem to be still good law in the case of a juvenile. So why can't the juvenile just do it that way?
Well, I think those options are not viable for juveniles for the same reasons that this court's rules committee decided that they were not adequate options for adults. Specifically with reconsideration motions, the issue of ineffective assistance of appellate counsel typically is not discovered until well after the 10-day time period.
Didn't Murnahan directly address that and say that courts should waive those timelines when appropriate?
Regarding a delayed reconsideration motion, they did address that. That, too, is even less of an option for juvenile cases where their periods of commitment to DYS are far lesser than adults. And so the timeline for remedying these issues are truncated in juvenile appeals. And thirdly,
But that seems to be the issue regardless of how the juvenile pursues the claim.
Not with the 26B, Your Honor. It affords some additional time, at least additional time to retain new appellate counsel to identify the issue and submit the claim. And in fact, in this court's decision in Lay, which refers to Davis explains that 26B provides a chance to raise these claims beyond the traditional motions in discretionary appeals. Again, that's Lay and Davis. And there's no sound basis for differentiating juveniles from adults when it comes to the effective assistance of counsel. And so for the very same reasons that this court's rules committee decided that additional avenues needed to be provided, those apply in equal measure to children who also face incarceration, who are entitled to no less of a right to effective assistance of counsel.
Okay, but again, you're really not addressing the question. We agree that a juvenile should be able to raise a claim for ineffective assistance of counsel. This court in Murnahan created an avenue to do that. Why The Rules Committee, for whatever reason, chose not to create an avenue for juveniles under the rule. So why can't the juvenile just rely on the avenues created by Murnaghan? Apply for a delayed reconsideration of the Court of Appeals where the alleged error took place, and if delayed reconsideration is denied, file for delayed appeal in this court.
I think I'll reiterate my answer that it's not adequate for the very same reasons as adults, but to add a little
But the court, actually, this court found it was adequate for adults, right? I mean, that's the holding in Murnaghan. Then
the Rules Committee then...
The Rules Committee didn't find it wasn't adequate. The Rules Committee, on the recommendation of this court, found created a new procedural path to do that. But that was not a finding that Murnaghan was wrongly decided or that was inadequate.
26B was enacted in response to Murnaghan, specifically to provide an additional avenue beyond the recognized motions and discretionary appeals. And so in that, I think in the very least, implicitly is a suggestion that those avenues are not adequate to raise ineffective assistance of appellate counsel claims. In addition to that, though, Your Honor.
Does the Rules Committee get to decide whether our jurisprudence is correct or not?
Well, this court gets to decide whether or not there's a constitutional right that is implicated and that the withholding of a protection despite children being equally subject to incarceration raises due process or equal protection concerns. And so I think for this, that's why it's important for this court to rule on this issue here. I think the Rules Committee can and should amend the language for the sake of clarity,
Would TA in this case, could TA have raised an ineffective assistance of a counsel through any mechanism other than the appellate rule?
No. So practically speaking,
how can you say that when Murnaghan gives them an avenue to do that?
Experientially,
Delayed reconsideration, the Court of Appeals, where the alleged error took place, right? That's what Murnaghan says, that they have a right to do that.
Regardless of
the timelines, Murnaghan says they have a right to do that. So they could have done
that. Experientially.
I'm asking why that wouldn't apply, and you really haven't answered that question at all.
I'm attempting to answer it, Your Honor, and my answer is that should we raise these claims in reconsideration motions, they would be dismissed for the flip side of the reason here that they should be raised in a 26B motion. That has happened in my experience. And so there needs to be clarity in the absence of that clarity.
Well, couldn't that be deemed error, an erroneous ruling?
It could, but again, that goes to show why a discretionary appeal, which is also addressed in Murnaghan, is not adequate because there is no right to appeal to this court, which is not an error correction court. And so I think the mere prospect of assigning error to such a decision wouldn't be adequate.
Well, either. But if the majority of this court believes that Murnaghan provides the mechanism for ineffective assistance of counsel claim, and you go to the appellate court and they say, nope, you got to go through Rule 26. And of course you argue appellate Rule 26 only says defendants and juveniles are not defendants, and they still go that way. Then isn't that something that we would then say that's incorrect unless or until the rule gets changed, a juvenile's mechanism is Murnaghan?
Well, I think, you know, again, taking a step back, Appellate Rule 26B superseded Murnaghan. So Murnaghan existed and it provided...
Right, but it clearly only says defendants.
That's correct, Your Honor, and it does, and we do recognize...
So did it supersede Murnaghan to the extent that it applies to juvenile delinquents?
Yes, and the reason, Your Honor, is that however plain language may be, we recognize that the term criminal defendant is plain and unambiguous. It cannot be used to achieve an unconstitutional or absurd results. The unconstitutionality here of withholding 26B's protection.
How is that unconstitutional when you have a procedure that allows you to raise the challenge? I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, this, it does make good sense, Your Honor, and the result bears directly on a child's constitutional right.
So what provision of the Constitution does it violate? A juvenile has an avenue to raise the claim. How does not allowing to use a rule that by its terms does not apply to the juvenile, how could that violate the Constitution?
It bears directly on a child's right to the effective assistance of counsel by leaving children with, and this is the point of contention here, no adequate remedy for the violation of that right. Again, for the same reasons that 26B is necessary for adults, it is also necessary for juveniles who enjoy no less of a right to the effective assistance of counsel. Lastly, Your Honors, I see that I am eating into my rebuttal time. This decision, agreeing with TA and extending the right to effective assistance, to raise 26B claims to children, would break no new ground. This court, as many times before, issued a constitutional ruling that has spurred rule changes for juveniles. I think the most notable and illustrative are Anderson and delayed appeals led to an appellate rule 5 change for juveniles to specifically include the term juvenile, as well as this court's decision in CS, which led to juvenile rule 3's amendment regarding the waiver of the right to effective assistance of counsel.
And Ms. Rackett, let me ask you briefly, sure, you're familiar with decisions, this court in State versus Hand, how we reconcile what it is you want us to find in this case with State versus Hand.
Yes, Your Honor. So I don't think, you know, a decision agreeing with us here is to say that children want it both ways or that we want it both ways. Different treatment for children is required where it's necessary to uphold the purposes and principles of the juvenile system, the rehabilitative purposes of the juvenile system, which requires some degree of flexibility. But those differences in treatment go to the benefit of the child. It's equally incumbent on courts to ensure that children do not receive the worst of both worlds, and that their fundamental constitutional rights, here the right to counsel, is equally protected. I would reiterate, I think the point of emphasis here is that there is no principled basis for distinguishing between juveniles and adults when it comes to the right to counsel. And I would direct the court's attention to the landmark decision in Galt, to Winship, to Breed, and then to this court's decision in CS, which emphasizes that commitment is incarceration, regardless of what it is called, and that delinquency cases are comparable in seriousness to felony prosecutions, and which really head off the argument that children have some lesser right to the effective assistance of counsel. In fact, this court's decision in NRA CS says the fact that a child's right to counsel stems from the generality of due process does not diminish its importance.
Thank you.
I will reserve the rest of my time, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Viglucci.
Good morning. Chief Justice O'Connor, counsel, may it please the court. I'm Vince Vellucci with the Medina County Prosecutor's Office for the appellee of the state of Ohio. I would start out noting that this case was improvidently certified as a conflict. As noted in Judge Teodosio's dissent below, although the Sixth District granted a juvenile's application to reopen his appeal in the case of In Re LN, that court did not decide or even consider the specific issue of whether juveniles can apply for reopening under the plain language of Appellate Rule 26B. In that case, the court simply implied and assumed that 26B applied to juveniles. It does not. But as this court has stated in the Whitelock case, for this court to certify a conflict between districts, the asserted conflict must be upon the same question. We also know that appellate courts decide only what they expressly decide. A decision is not precedent on a particular issue unless it squarely addresses the issue. This court recently noted in the O'Keefe case that when an issue is not argued or is ignored in a decision, that decision is not precedent to be followed in a subsequent case where the issue arises. Mere implicit assumptions are not binding precedent. Now, in terms of the certified question itself, Appellate Rule 26B, the plain language provides, actually 26B1 provides that a defendant in a criminal case may apply for reopening of the appeal from the judgment of conviction and sentence based on a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. State v. Hand, as the Justice mentioned, tells us that a juvenile with a delinquency charge is not a defendant in a criminal case, and we know that a delinquency adjudication is not a conviction. The Ninth District correctly did not reach the merits of TA's application for reopening because the plain language of 26B simply does not apply to juvenile delinquents. This court has often stated that where the language of a statute or rule is clear and unambiguous, it is the duty of the courts to apply the language as written, neither making additions nor subtractions to the language. I know that Appellate Rule 5 was mentioned. You look at Appellate Rule 5, Appellate Rule 7, and Appellate Rule 8, actually, they clearly distinguish between juvenile delinquency and criminal cases. Criminal and delinquency are not just haphazardly lumped together in the language, in these rules. Appellate Rule 5A, for example, provides for delayed appeals in three distinct types of cases. It talks about criminal cases, delinquency cases, and SYO cases. Appellate Rules 7 and 8 provide different rules for civil and juvenile appeals for stays as opposed to criminal appeals. If the drafters wanted 26B to apply to juveniles, they easily could have said that in the language. Murnahan obviously was mentioned. We know that 26B did not even exist until after this court's 1992 decision in Murnahan. Murnahan held that ineffective assistance of appellate counsel could be raised in three different ways, none of which involved Appellate Rule 26B because it did not yet exist until after Murnahan. And the court said that it could be raised first by an application for reconsideration in the Court of Appeals, second by an application for delayed reconsideration in the Court of Appeals, or a direct appeal to this court. There's three ways that it can be raised. TA utilized none of those methods in this case to assert ineffective assistance of his appellate counsel. He instead attempted to file a 26B application for reopening when we know that that does not apply to juveniles. Nowhere in Appellate Rule 26B does it state that that's the exclusive method for claiming ineffective assistance of counsel. We have Murnahan, as Justice DeWine discussed earlier. No one is saying that juveniles don't have a constitutional right to effective assistance of appellate counsel. They do. It just wasn't asserted correctly in this case, Your Honors, because 26B does not apply to juveniles. Should it? Perhaps. And the Rules Committee can, if it wants to, look at that issue as to whether the juvenile delinquent should be added to that rule.
Is there anything that you can think of that would make it more restrictive for a juvenile to have to apply, maybe just based on the authority of Murnahan, as opposed to having some procedural mechanism like Appellate Rule 26B?
Well, I think the easiest way to tackle this would be to just amend the Rule 26B.
But that doesn't help TA today.
Correct. But today, TA is not precluded from asserting, as I said, a reconsideration, which he's out of time for now. He could still try a delayed reconsideration, or he could have...
On what grounds?
Well, just, I would start with the fact that, 26B doesn't apply to juveniles, and it's particularly if it's later amended, for example. Could always come back with a delayed motion for reconsideration.
So should this court decide, as the state argues, that Appellate Rule 26B doesn't apply to juveniles, then you're saying that TA has, as a recourse, just applying to the court pursuant to the authority of Murnahan or whatever and asking for reconsideration that way?
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
So we're talking about appellate rights of the juvenile. So what's been argued is due process safeguards. So if a statute's found unconstitutional, we don't keep applying the statute until the legislature changes it, do we?
No.
Why would we do the same with the rules here unless we agree that this should be improvidently allowed?
Well, I don't think it's unconstitutional. I think you're making the assumption that it's unconstitutional.
Well, I'm not making any assumptions. I'm just saying because the constitutional issue has been argued, then if we consider that and if we reach the conclusion, we wouldn't apply the rule anymore, we would apply the rule as it should have been written if that's where our decision goes. So we wouldn't apply, I'm just saying, we just like with the statute, if the statute is missing parts or has things that are noxious to constitutional rights, then we don't continue to apply it, do we?
Well, no, but I don't think you can start reading language into this rule that we wish was there, but isn't there. That's not the proper way to go about this. The way to go about this is to amend the rule if we think that it's not giving juveniles as fair a chance to raise ineffective assistance as adults. I would say they do have the same opportunity to raise it, just not under that particular procedural mechanism. They can still do it under Murnahan, but
other rules of appellate procedure do apply to juveniles, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I just mentioned 5, 7, 8, how they specifically delineate criminal defendants, juvenile delinquents. So clearly the precedent in those other rules is that you can't just assume that criminal defendants also means juvenile delinquents simply because it shares some aspects of the criminal system, the fact that they are facing incarceration and so forth. In many other ways, juvenile cases are akin to civil cases, as we know, and are just sort of their own thing. If the juvenile rules don't apply, for example, since there are so few juvenile rules, we default to the civil rules, not the criminal rules. So in a lot of ways, criminal cases are not like juvenile cases at all. So to just it'd be a very bad precedent to start reading into rules and statutes language that clearly is not there, particularly when there is another way set out by this court to raise the ineffective assistance of counsel. And certainly we would not be opposed to, at some point, the rulemaking authority here reconsidering that and amending that rule, but that simply is not the way the rule exists today. And just in terms of, just circling back to the improvidently certifying as a conflict, I know this, I know that the recent Maddox case was cited by the appellant in terms of the ripeness issue not specifically being raised in those courts below, but it was still certified as a conflict. I think we're heading down a slippery slope there in terms of certifying these conflicts, and I think Justice Kennedy had a very well-reasoned dissent in that case, along with Justice Fisher as well, commented on how it was not decided. The question of ripeness in that case simply was not decided in those. I think it was the 12th District.
But isn't
district.
The difference in those cases that the issue that was decided had to assume ripeness in order to decide the issue of constitutionality? And didn't the courts in those cases come back in subsequent decisions and say, we implicitly decided rightness?
That's true. And the majority opinion did come back then and say, in response to the dissent in that case, said, well, yes, they didn't decide it directly when we certified the conflict, but now later they've said in subsequent cases that this is the case. Yes, it is ripe for review. They're officially saying that.
But here, and I guess so, what I see is different is if you're saying in the Sixth District case, they didn't address the issue of Appellate Rule 26. It's a matter of the constitutional issue of ineffective assistance of appellate counsel, which that case, I believe, and Justice DeWine has set forth, believes that there is a constitutional protection already there. Those are two different paths to deciding an issue that differ from, you don't get to constitutionality if you don't have rightness.
Right. And I would just say, in this case, we don't have a subsequent ruling saying from the Sixth District, we expressly say that Appellate Rule 26B applies to juveniles.
One isn't that dependent on the other here.
Well, I'm just sort of comparing the Maddox situation to this case.
Me too.
And yes, I suppose the Maddox question is on ripeness. This court has never said it, but the idea that justiciability is something that has to be implied and decided in every case, whether it's expressed or not. I think that's different from an issue of, does the plain language of a rule apply to who's in front of the court? That's an issue I would suggest has to be expressed in every case, especially where the plain language, like in this case, says criminal defendants and not juvenile delinquents. That's a foundational issue. That's a fundamental issue. It's a very easy issue to spot, and isn't one that we should just imply that they decided or didn't decide. It just wasn't addressed, and it didn't set a binding precedent. Because we know implied things that are implied assumptions do not become binding precedent.
So, are you saying a juvenile delinquent is the equivalent of a criminal defendant?
No, I'm not. But I would certainly concede that juvenile delinquents share some similarities with criminal defendants. Sure, but they are treated the same as adults in some respects, and they're treated differently in other respects. Something like the right to counsel, right? We believe that, and the case law believes, as stated, that juveniles and adults are both have the right to counsel, but juveniles don't have the right to a jury trial, for example. There are certain things that where we do differentiate.
So when does the juvenile become a delinquent?
When they are adjudicated delinquent at an adjudication hearing, which is what they call a trial in juvenile court. I believe I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel,
you've saved a little over 12 minutes, or excuse me, a little over 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a few quick points regarding the conflict. Our position is that, one appellate district resolved 26B motions on the merits. Another one in this case decided that was not proper because of the language used in the statute. I think that is sufficient of a conflict for this court to have certified the question, and that this court should answer it. Secondly, the conflict case itself, LN, is a striking example of why this 26B avenue is important and necessary. There, the record was not filed filed at all by appellate counsel, and so that was not something that could have been raised in a reconsideration motion, let alone more generally why reconsideration is not adequate, because reconsideration is not a path for raising wholly new claims. Ineffective assistance of appellate counsel claims can't be raised, obviously, in the direct appeal because it hasn't happened yet. And so reconsideration is not a chance to raise new issues and arguments that were not part of the direct appeal decision. In addition, LN, again demonstrating the practical import of this right, LN was reopened. And the Sixth District addressed the arguments on the merits and ultimately vacated an invalid sex offender classification order. That would not have happened but for the ability to present an ineffective assistance of counsel claim through 26B. Lastly, Your Honors, I will just end with the fact that the parties in both decisions below, majority and dissent, are all on common ground in agreeing that the language in 26B can and should be amended to clarify and specify that the protections there apply to juveniles. The parties all agree that that can and should happen. So I think this case really boils down to what can and should happen in the meantime, and that's that this court should rule on the constitutional issue presented based on decades of precedent making clear that the civil label of convenience rationale is not a sufficient basis for withholding traditional protections from juveniles.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.